Welcome to The Inner Circle, the podcast where the Radius Group, a team of experienced wealth advisors, brings you inside the circle of smart financial planning. With a network of industry experts, the Radius Group discusses the latest trends while sharing timeless wealth management techniques. So whether you're looking to optimize your portfolio, minimize taxes, or plan for your future, The Inner Circle is here to provide exclusive and valuable insights. Our guest today is Michael Lynch. Michael is a managing director of Applied Insights for Hartford Funds. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and his views are his own.
Welcome back to another episode of The Inner Circle. My name is Colin Faulkner, Senior Wealth Strategy Associate with the Radius Group, and your host for today's conversation. One of the most important things and common things that we talk about in this job in our industry is retirement planning. Imagine for a second that you have this, you know, multi-million dollar retirement portfolio, and the math is just completely perfect. All the spreadsheets are green across the board. You're set. But then one day, a single burned out light bulb in your hallway forces you to move out of your house forever. Sounds a little crazy, but it happens all the time, believe it or not. Today, we're looking at some incredible research from the MIT Age Lab, and they created this in partnership with the Hartford Funds, and it basically proves that the biggest threat to your retirement isn't the stock market at all. It's your quality of life. It's your house, it's your car keys, and your lunch plans, which is such a wild paradigm shift for most people because for decades, literally generations, society has treated retirement entirely like a math problem. But what if we are asking some of those wrong starting questions? So joining me today is Michael Lynch, Managing Director of Applied Insights from Hartford Funds. Michael works very closely with teams such as ours all across the country and helps bring this research to clients through this quality of life and quality of life seminars. All right. So Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Colin. I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity today.
Yeah, of course. Excited to have you. And Mike, before we dive into the framework itself, why don't we start with the research behind it? So Hartford Funds has partnered with the MIT Age Lab on this work. Can you explain a little more about what the Age Lab is and why their research around longevity has become so important?
Sure, I'm glad to. So Hartford Funds is actually a founding sponsor. It's about a 20-plus year relationship right now with MIT's Age Lab. So it's literally MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, up in Cambridge, Mass, on their campus within the engineering school, is an area called the Age Lab. Now, this Age Lab is run by Dr. Joe Coughlin. Dr. Joe's an engineer by trade, but his real passion is thinking about longevity, thinking about the next phase of life for so many of us. So he put together this physical lab, and it truly is fascinating. They've got so many different technology devices and things that they research, but they're really studying all aspects of aging. It could be housing, transportation, healthcare. What are the needs today? And then more importantly, what does that look like in the future? What does the housing community of the future look like? What does transportation look like in the future? So he is working with organizations like ours and a number of different companies throughout the world and quite honestly countries. As we think about population and shifts in population, he and his team are on top of it doing the research. And then most importantly, they're able to share some of the research with us that we can ultimately translate to financial advisors and their clients to really think about that next phase of life, to think about longevity. And then more importantly, how do I manage that, which almost sometimes becomes a full-time job? How do I manage longevity?
Yeah, that is the nerd in me gets really excited thinking about all those, all the different data that goes into it, and wanting to learn a little bit more about it. Now, one of the things that you mentioned is longevity, and that's, you know, one of the key themes in this research is that people are living longer than ever before. So, Mike, how does this increased longevity, change the way that we should think about retirement planning?
Yeah, and it truly is that. Dr. Joe tells us quite often that, based on his studies and the work, that we're going to live a lot longer, a lot healthier, and a lot more active than prior generations. You know, I can say as a boomer, I just turned 62, so certainly in that boomer range, I think when we think about longevity, quite often we compare it to our parents' and grandparents' life expectancy. when it's really ours and future generations. So living longer means, you know, gosh, we've got some additional days, additional years. We want to make sure we enjoy that. So how do we prepare for that? For many of us, we may spend 20, 30, if not 40 years in that next phase, maybe spending more time in retirement than we did working. So it's really something we need to start thinking about, really start to evaluate, because we're firm believers. When you think about retirement, think about that next phase. It's not a 10 or 15 year. It's a longer decision. And again, it's not necessarily something that's kind of like a sprint. It's more of a marathon. And we got to kind of put that work and that, you know, really resolve into thinking about that next phase and thinking how important that next phase is. If we're going to get all this additional days and additional time, we want to make sure we enjoy it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And a lot of the plans that we work with clients on to build, to, you know, look out and project what retirement can look like, we do expect a lot of times they're going to live for another 25, 30 years after even they turn, say, 65. Now, when you look at the research, too, one thing that I noticed was this is introducing the idea that modern life is defined by volume, velocity, and complexity. So more decisions, faster change, and more information than ever before. It gives me the mental image of like Tetris blocks trying to fall, you know, they're falling more and more rapidly, and you're trying to figure out exactly where they're going. So how does this environment impact the way people plan for retirement?
Yeah, so I think the good news is we've got access to more information than ever before, right? It's at our fingertips nowadays. That's good and bad, because I think sometimes that also distracts us and it gets us off track. So I think, you know, having this volume of information, sometimes it becomes overwhelming. The speed with which we get information. I'm still of the generation that I can remember I called someplace and I heard on the person's voicemail that if they didn't return the call today, they'd probably get to me in the next day or two. Well, now, you know, nowadays that kind of gets your head fuming. For many of us, we get upset when we send a text and we don't get a response immediately. So I think, you know, it's more that short-term thinking and that immediate gratification. And I think that also leads to the complexity. The fact, again, that I've got to start really thinking about longevity and almost managing this job of longevity because it's much more complex. So I think what's important, most important, quite honestly, is having someone like you and your firm that I can talk to, that can weed out some of this information. I can say, great, it's great to have all this access to stuff, but what does it mean at the end of the day? And how do you help me kind of navigate this process? And I think that's where it's so valuable to have this conversation. Again, you know, it's great that we've got things at our fingertips, but sometimes we don't necessarily understand them, or we may read something and it may push us off track. It may cause some panic or some concern when, you know, someone local, someone that knows me, knows my spouse and kids can say, yes, that's information, but here's your situation. Here's why we think it's going to go this direction instead of that direction, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no shortage of information out there. There's no question about that, especially as it relates to retirement planning and investments too. We have so much access to information. I'm not sure our minds were ever created to be able to handle the amount of information we have access to now. But, and that, you know, that's one of the benefits when you look at this Age Lab, you look at MIT Age Lab, and they've been able to distill all this research really into three surprisingly simple questions that can actually predict this future quality of life. So why don't we walk through those, Mike? The first question is, who will change my light bulbs? Now, at first glance, it almost sounds humorous, right? But it's actually a really profound question. So, Mike, what does that question really represent?
So that question really represents maybe one of the more important questions, which is thinking about housing in the future. Where do I plan on aging? Now, AARP did a recent study and asked individuals approaching age 65, where do you plan on aging? And probably no surprise, 90% responded that they want to age in their current home. It's maybe where I was married, have a mortgage and memories. I feel safe in the neighborhood. I'm, you know, comfortable. This is something that I, you know, want to think that I can age or try and age in my home as long as possible. The challenge is, as we get older, our homes get older. The average home in the United States today was built in the late 70s. I venture to guess it wasn't designed by an architect at that time, thinking, I'll bet you somebody's going to live in this house in their 70s, if not 80s or 90s. You know, for many of us, we may have a traditional colonial. where we've got a lot of stairs. And sometimes going to the basement, maybe where the washer and dryer is, those staircases aren't necessarily as firm as maybe going up the stairs. So little things like really thinking about my home, taking a step back and evaluating, you know, can I change a light bulb if I lose a light bulb in the house? Who can help me with some of those things? Is there some technology that I can add to the home to allow me to age in my home safely? And I think that's one of the key factors. There's marketplaces exploding right now. There's services being offered. I would encourage folks listening, if you're thinking about doing anything, any modifications to your home, before you kind of commit and say yes, ask the contractor, ask the builder, if they have this certification. It's a CAP certification, C-A-P-S. It stands for Certified Aging in Place Specialist. It's one of the fastest designations historically builders or contractors have gotten. And basically what happens, they go through some physical training, some online training, and they become CAP certified. Once they're CAP certified, they can identify obstacles to aging in the home. You know, for many of us, we want to maybe redo our kitchen. I'm in the process of redoing my kitchen right now, so I'm a little sensitive to it. And what we find is, for many folks, maybe in their 50s and maybe early 60s, everybody wants the tall cabinets and the big island. That's great when you're in your 50s or 60s, but can I navigate around that kitchen in my 70s? If I'm going to redo the bathroom, is now the time to make it handicap accessible? If I suffer a fall and I can't get up the stairs to lay in my bed, is there a place for a Murphy bed? So little things like that, CAPS people can help really identify obstacles to aging in that home. So if the folks, people do want to age in their home longer, we want to make sure they age in their home as safe as possible. It may also be some technology, maybe some cameras in the home, maybe a cooktop that turns off if I forget to turn it off. So I think housing is, in particular, as we go forward, is an important one to think about. And then to think about what changes can I make to, again, allow me to age in that home as long as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going beyond just paying off your mortgage before retirement. I know that's a lot of goals. That's a primary goal for a lot of people. And we talk with a lot of clients, and some of them want to move. They plan on moving, whether that's to be closer to the kids or really maybe closer to the grandkids, or they plan to stay here and have, you know, a base camp or a home base, right? Or stay in the house that they're currently in, and that's their forever home. But one way or the other, whether you're moving or you're staying as you transition into retirement, what would you say are some of the practical things people should consider if they want to stay in their homes or the home they're looking at longer?
Again, I think the key is bringing someone in, someone that kind of comes from a neutral category or from a neutral field that can say, you know, maybe now's the time to redo the bathroom, but we also want to think about a no threshold shower, because we don't have to walk into that tub or kind of, you know, lift our leg to get in that tub. Again, as we get a little bit older, It's a little more challenging. Is there someone that can plow my driveway when I need it in the wintertime? Is there someone that can cut the grass, clean out the gutters? So all these little types of services are things that we want to make sure that are starting to begin to be discussed. The last thing you want is your 85-year-old dad, right, to find out that he was on a ladder cleaning the gutter and then something happened. So services that are available to them, I think, are going to be so important. And I think it's almost the opportunity to start building an inventory. You know, what types of services, what types of needs do I need? And do I have a go-to person? If not, starting to seek the counsel of those folks or starting to do some research to find out who's the best in the area that can help me accomplish that. Again, we want to age in our home. Technology, you know, some folks may have a smart home. I'd encourage you to keep that up. I think that's a great idea. But personally, I'd rather have a safe home. So What technology can I add to the home to keep me safe? And quite honestly, home technology is kind of exploded. It's difficult to get some of these services. We saw, as a result of the pandemic, unfortunately, many of us were spending a lot more time in the house. We're starting to think about, gosh, you know, maybe now's the time to put a smoke detector in. Maybe now's the time, CO2 and, again, cooktops and all those types of things. Well, yes, you can imagine with more people buying those types of products, there was kind of a backlog. It seems like it's catching up a little bit, but now's the time to really start to think about that and think about what modifications, what changes can I put into the home.
Yeah. It almost makes you feel like the home is like a house is like a second body. When you're young, your house is just a seamless extension of you. You run up the stairs, two stairs at a time or two steps at a time. and then you reach the top shelf of the cabinets without any problem. You hop over the edge of that bathtub, right? Doesn't matter if there's a threshold or not. But as you age, right, it almost becomes a little bit of like a dangerous obstacle course. You can't reach that light bulb. You're living in the dark. You know, if you can't step over that tub, you can't bathe safely even, right? So that sudden shift really turns your biggest, part of one of the biggest parts of your life where you spend a lot of your time into a big liability, one of your biggest assets into a big liability. Now, moving on to the second question, Mike, might be actually my favorite. How will I get an ice cream cone? Again, it sounds simple, but it speaks to something deeper about independence and access. So, Mike, what would you say this question reveals about how we think about retirement and quality of life?
Yeah, I think in particular this question, when, you know, I'd ask the folks that are listening, and if you close your eyes for a second and think about that next phase of life, maybe it is retirement, maybe you're scaling back a little bit from work perspective, but kind of thinking ideally about that traditional retirement phase, what is it you're doing? And then number two question is, how will you get around to do that? Meaning, will you have access to transportation? So it's so important to make sure, especially in retirement, that we get up, get out, and start to stay active or continue to stay active. So as you think about that next phase, again, what do you plan on doing? Is it getting an ice cream cone? Well, that's great, but how do you get to that ice cream shop? Do you have access to transportation? As we get a little bit older, sometimes maybe a little more challenging, driving at night or just driving in general. Now, I do think we're blessed in this generation having options like Uber and Lyft and other public transportation options. But are we taking advantage of those? Have we thought about those? Have we added maybe the Uber app to our phone, you know, looking at Lyft, looking at other types of options? Or making sure that, you know, we have access to transportation. Our car is something we're able to still operate and still be able to navigate around. So I think making sure that we're able to get out of the home. And I think the challenge sometimes is, you know, gosh, if you've ever had the conversation, which I had to have with my dad, it was very uncomfortable, but taking the keys away, it's heartbreaking. But again, I think the good news is we're in a generation now where we have more options available to us to make sure we're still able to get out of the home. The challenge is, are we taking advantage of those options? Are we looking at all those different features? So, you know, when we think about these questions, I think it's important to note that, you know, we talked a little bit about the quantity of life in retirement. And I think there's some great tools and calculators that it can help us get to where we need to be. This is really thinking about the quality of life and retirement. And I'd argue, you know, they're probably both equally as important. Sometimes quality may be even more important than quantity. So addressing some of these questions, really starting to think about it. And then more importantly, sharing that with a financial professional. This is what I plan on doing in retirement. This is what my vision of retirement really looks like. I think it helps, you know, both to have a better educated conversation.
Yeah. My mind goes to thinking about the classic American suburban home. Everything's in walking distance, the ice cream shop down the road, the restaurant, the diner, right? You can walk pretty much anywhere. But in reality today, those places are 5 miles down the road and it takes a highway without a crosswalk to get there. And really thinking through, you know, what is my access to different things in retirement, that might bring up questions like, maybe I do want to move to be closer to proximity to a denser area with more ice cream shops or more grocery stores that are in walking distance. And that's really what we help clients walk through too, is those scenarios of, what does that mean financially for you? If that's the quality of life that you desire, what does that mean for you financially to help inform the ability to do it? So, Mike, how might technology, or I guess you spoke to a little bit with, you know, the different ride sharing platforms and with a technology that kind of helps design or solve some of these challenges. Is there any other technologies or community designs that you have found that help solve some of those challenges?
Yeah, I think it's really trying to explore and to try and look at Google Maps, right? I mean, it's a minor feature, but, you know, from a time when you had to actually go to AAA and try and get a map, and sometimes the third of five pages is missing, so you're challenged. So, you know, having access to Waze and all these other types of things that you're blessed to have on your phone or right in your car. And quite honestly, Dr. Joe and the team are working with Tesla. They're working with other car manufacturers They actually have a Volkswagen Beetle housed up at MIT's campus. They fondly call it Miss Daisy. And this Beetle is a simulator. But what they do is they have individuals come in and drive the simulator. Now, while you're driving the simulator, they throw distractions at you. It might be somebody crossing the street very quickly. Mm. It might be, you know, someone coming out to get a paper. It might be a noise or a bump in the car. And what they're trying to do is measure our response time as drivers. And then more importantly, what technology can be added to the car? You know, maybe it's a backup camera, maybe it's blind spot monitoring. The goal is to try and make that process as safe as possible. So I think the good news is maybe the cars are a little too smart nowadays, we probably argue, but the good news is, you know, MIT and the team are looking at that, trying to make that experience as safe as possible. And again, thinking about technology, especially inside the car, we'll continue to see improvements in that area. Mm.
Yeah, it makes me think of a client I talked with a couple of years ago. They have a daughter and a granddaughter in the area, and they had just had a surgery, and they lost almost all their sight and their left eye. And he went out, bought another car so he could continue drive because he got into a little bit of a fender bender in the driveway at his daughter's house. So he got a car with more technology that has the blind spot monitors and will beep at him when he's getting closer to another car. So it is amazing to see how technology is evolving. So Mike, now that we've covered, you know, the physical space with the light bulb, we've covered the access mobility and the psychology of the car keys with the ice cream cone, what there's another emotional hole here as well. And that's the third question: who will I have lunch with? And now this one shifts the conversation toward relationships and social networks. So Mike, why is social connection such a powerful predictor of quality of life as we go?
Yeah, I think it's really one of the more important ones. I think, as you mentioned, I think this is really an interesting indicator as to your success in retirement. And it really does come down to your strong social network, or what does your social network look like? You know, for many of us, we've been working for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, potentially. Our social networks quite often are wrapped around individuals we work with. So based on the research that Dr. Joe and the team have done, what they told us is there tends to be a difference between males and females, generally speaking, as far as strength of one's social network. Females generally, on average, do a much better job building relationships with people inside and outside the workforce. So their transition to that next phase is a little bit easier. Males, probably no big surprise, unfortunately, we do a terrible job. We build relationships with our coworkers. You know, maybe I'm working in a home office and I have lunch with the same group of people every day for X number of years. Well, the challenge is, what if I'm the first one in that group to retire? Who am I going to have lunch with? Again, that's kind of a no-brainer. I used to go down to the cafeteria, meet up with my group at the table. It was a home run, right? And I knew, you know, who I was going to talk to, what we were going to talk about, and kind of look forward to that part of the day. Well, again, if I'm the first one to retire, who am I going to have lunch with? Worse yet, I think quite often, what if you're the last one in your group to retire? Everybody else is really going on to do different things. I can't tell you how many events I've done in person where I've asked people, who do you plan on spending your time with? And I've quite often seen where the male says to the female, well, you know, we're going to spend all our time together, correct? And then you kind of see the look on the wife's face saying, that wasn't my plan, right? Maybe some time together, but not 100% of our time together. So I think what happens is, and based on the research, what they found is those that enter retirement, enter that next phase, that have a strong social network, again, making sure we get up, get out, and stay active, that really is a key indicator versus those that maybe kind of scale back a little bit. You come to find out they didn't have a strong social network. I can think of my own family. I remember two different grandparents, and I saw with one granddad, he had a great relationship with his spouse, with, you know, family members and inside and outside the, you know, different areas and in the community. So his transition was very simple. He kind of didn't skip a beat. I think the challenge for the other grandfathers, what we found is many of his coworkers were still working, and he was, you know, the first one to retire. Well, he didn't have that strong social network. His wife, it was a surprise to her because she kind of had her own relationship with tennis groups and all these other types of relationships. So sadly, we kind of saw him pull back a little bit. And then that gradual decline really started to increase. And unfortunately, many times and in this case, his health suffered from it. So I'd argue those that probably, you know, enjoy retirement and are doing well in retirement, it's probably that indicator that they have a strong social network. And I do think, again, not to minimize the pandemic, we've mentioned it a couple of times, but the pandemic was almost a mini dress rehearsal for folks. And I think for many of us, we realized that, you know, if we took advantage of some of the technology and we did maybe a social, you know, a webinar for a happy hour or a coffee hour or whatever, we realized that we could continue to keep those relationships going. For many folks, it was a real eye-opener, the pandemic, that, gosh, you know, I haven't talked to people in years and I'm not sure how to get started and I'm not sure what my connections look like. Sadly, I think those folks, probably it was an eye-opener to say, I've got to start really thinking about this and focusing on this, because again, we think it's probably the most important of the three questions and it's one of the most important factors.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, you think about all that research and what it suggests about, you know, social networks and entering into retirement and how a lot of people don't want to do anything. They just cut off completely. They quit cold turkey almost, I guess, as you could say. And there's not really a lot after retirement for them to mentally engage in. There's a story I heard one time, I think it's in about a village in Italy, and they were renowned for having, you know, residents that lived in their 90s and even hundreds, even despite heavy smoking and drinking and being overweight. But, you know, a lot of that their longevity was attributed to the fact that they have very deep familial and social connections that outweighed some of those really poor habits. I would be interested to know how long they would live if they didn't drink and they didn't smoke, and they still had those deep familial and social connections. But, you know, you think about this too, and you, it's probably hard, like as you mentioned, Mike, how do you maintain those social relationships when they aren't just there for you in the office, right? What are some practical ways, or what are some ways people can intentionally build or maintain those strong social networks later in life when they don't have that office space or they don't have those colleagues?
Yeah, I think there's a number of factors. I think it's, you know, certainly starting to be more open-minded to explore, maybe start to document some things that you've always wanted to do. You know, kind of the honey-do list, or that, you know, kind of that passion list, if you will, that you've always wanted to try and accomplish. Start to put some pen to paper, start documenting some of those things. Start to think about simple things that you can do, you know, maybe joining a pickleball group, right? Or taking up some type of new hobby or interest. I think the challenge for many of us, unfortunately, is we tend to pull back a little bit. I remember I met an individual once and he said, you know, unfortunately, when I entered retirement, I learned a new word. And I'm thinking, what in the world, you know, what was the new word? He said, unfortunately, the word was no. He said, I started really saying no to people. I had a buddy call me, wanted to go for a drink. And I said, nah, probably not. You know, I can't do it today. Never really got back to him with an alternate date. He said, you know, my wife said, you know, would you want to go to a show or go to dinner? No. He said, I think what I started to realize is I started to say no too often. Well, people started moving on. And it started to lose some of those relationships. So I think, you know, it's an opportunity to kind of take a step back, evaluate some of the relationships you have today. I certainly would encourage you with any of these questions. Don't wait till you're in that phase to start thinking about your housing, thinking about what you plan on doing, who you plan on spending your time with. You know, until you're in that phase, let's start to think about it as early as possible and start to think about, what do I plan on doing? And then, you know, what types of relationships can I meet? And maybe it's, you know, you meet a group and that, great, that's the terrific group for you. Maybe it's not. You got to move on and modify. But I think really exploring yourself, exploring your interests, your passions, what types of things you you plan on doing, building that strong connection for family. I think, you know, one of the things I saw was Netflix did a terrific documentary special on how to live to age 100. And it kind of references what you mentioned. They talk about blue zones. Now, blue zones is that collection of individuals over the age of 100 and great numbers in population. And there was a woman in Italy. She was cooking in her kitchen with her daughter, her granddaughter, and her great-granddaughter. So she had a strong social connection. That family aspect, I think, is such an important connection. And those are ideas, or those are thoughts where we can really try and start to explore, you know, what types of things do I plan on doing? I know sometimes it's a whole new venture, but I think it's a venture that's really worth processing are kind of going down that path, because that's truly going to help us really enjoy that next phase.
Yeah, that's good. And I know that there's a lot of people that I'm sure can relate to a lot of the information and the research that we're discussing, but probably the generation that this is most applicable to now and might resonate most with is the baby boomer generation. I think the statistics are that over the next 10 years, there are estimated to be 16 million baby boomers that retire. And their retirement, the way what they're facing is different than a lot of other previous generations. So, Mike, what trends would you say are driving that change? How is it different, or what trends are driving that difference that the baby boomers are experiencing relative to other generations?
Yeah, you know, I think when you think about the boomers historically, the boomers have changed everything. The boomers have changed transportation. They've changed education. They've changed the role of work. Every single area the boomers have kind of tweaked, have modified, have changed. You think about, you know, years ago, probably quite a few years ago, but early on in the boomer generation, when, you know, people came back from the war, multiple children, larger families moving to rural areas, there was an explosion of you know, the need for education. So many schools were being built. Where now we're starting to see the opposite of that. I know I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. The biggest growth right now that we're seeing from a building perspective is over 55 communities and retirement communities. They are popping up left and right. They're in desperate need, quite honestly, but they're popping up left and right. They're beautiful locations, but they also have two things in common. They're very expensive, and on average, there's usually a waiting list to get in. So I think that that next phase, when you think about boomers changing everything, they're going to change that role of retirement. And I've mentioned a couple of times in the past, but Dr. Joe is really encouraging us to stop using the R word so often, meaning the word retirement, because we're meeting more and more folks that are saying, retirement, that was my parents and grandparents, that's not me. So he's a firm believer that that 65, 67 age, where you have that kind of hard and fast finish line, where you retire, you get the watch and the cake and the party, he thinks that's probably being pulled down or going away. Mm-hmm. Where folks are saying, you know, maybe I want to work a little bit longer, maybe into my mid-70s, maybe not the same role, maybe not in the same fashion, maybe try and go part-time or whatever. But it is interesting, because they really are, we're going to change the role of work. We're going to continue to evolve and modify that. And I think, quite honestly, many small businesses would probably be thrilled to have qualified people. So I think that those kind of factors are really going to tweak what we think about that next phase. And again, it'll be interesting to see whether folks actually do continue to enter retirement or, you know, want to stay active and busy. I think for many of us, it's a difficult transition, because retirement, you know, work is who we are. It's kind of defined us, right? And if you take that role away, who are we? What do we do? And for some, it's overwhelming. Yeah. For some, it may be it's a passion. It's a lifelong dream. It's something I've always wanted to do. So, you know, for many folks, we're probably going to continue to work past those traditional ages. Those are things we need to have conversations with you and your team about, because everybody's going to be a little different as well as we get into that next phase.
Yeah, that is one thing that we do talk a lot with clients about and are seeing, I would say, almost more and more, is people transitioning into retirement, right? And it's a transition phase, and that may be several years for some, and it may be longer for others and shorter for some. But, you know, again, one of the ideas that we've discussed in this research that I've really appreciated is that this retirement planning, you know, retirement plan goes way beyond just the money alone, right? It, you know, the financial security part is important, but some of those questions that we start with, we want to make sure we're starting with, what kind of quality of life do you want to have? What do you desire to have in retirement? And then let the money try to inform what's the ability to attain that lifestyle as well, right? And evaluating all the different what-if scenarios that life could bring, right? And, you know, again, true retirement success is about that independence, access, and the meaningful relationships, all illustrated by those three questions that we've discussed today, right? And they may sound simple, but, you know, who will change my light bulbs? How will I get an ice cream cone? And who will I have lunch with? They challenge us to think more holistically about what life might look like from now. So, Mike, I want to thank you for joining us and sharing all of this research with us today.
Well, I I really appreciate the opportunity, Colin. Thank you. Terrific conversation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. And for our listeners, if today's conversation sparked a few new questions about your own retirement journey, that's exactly the point. So take a few minutes to think through those three questions for yourself. And if you'd like help turning those ideas into a plan, we'd be happy to continue that conversation because the best retirement plans aren't just designed to grow your wealth. They're designed to help you live well. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Inner Circle. Until next time, this is Colin signing off.
Today's episode features financial advisors with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 3601 Rigby Road, Miamisburg, Ohio, and can be reached at radiusgroup@ubs.com. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary.